This is Poetry Off the Shelf. I'm Helena de Groot. Today, our new reality. I'm in my apartment in New York, a fifth floor walk up in the back of the building, away from the street. And usually, I love that it's so quiet. But now it's been driving me up the walls a little bit. So I've been recording things, a bird, the rain, just some sounds around the house. And I've also been texting and calling people pretty much all throughout the day. I call my mom and my friends in Belgium in the morning, friends here in the evening, and many afternoons the past 2 weeks, I've been checking in with several of the poets we've had on the show.
Hello.
Oh, hi, Bruce. This is Helena. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay. We're all just trying to find our way through this, huh?
This is Bruce Beasley. He lives with his wife in Bellingham, Washington, close to the Canadian border.
Yeah. After my father died, my mother dated this man named Jesse for several years, and we were all sharing a hotel suite at a beach at an island off of Georgia. And for some reason, he started just bellowing in his sleep, like louder than I've ever heard anybody shout in my life. And he was saying over and over, the whole world's going to hell, going to hell, going to hell, the whole world's going to hell, the world's going to hell. And I just had that voice going through my brain lately, you know. It's just, I don't know what this is, but the whole world is going to hell.
So who's in the house with you?
My wife and our son.
This is Matthew Zapruder.
We're trying to do school.
He lives with his wife and their five-year-old son in Piedmont, California.
We do like a little circle time. And then, you know, he does it days of the week and the weather and what day it is and all that kind of stuff or whatever. And then he does little activities and we break things up with recess and snack and all that kind of stuff to try to kind of keep him on a schedule. A lot of parents are doing that, yeah. I think. It's just no schedule makes everyone crazy, especially the kid.
I'm trying not to have too much of a kind of a schedule. You know, I think I had big plans for that. And then after day one, I'm like, you know what? I'm not at all equipped to homeschool my kids. So if you want to play with Legos, play with Legos. If you want to read, if you want to take luxurious naps, let's just do all the things that we can't normally do.
This is Amy Nazuko-Metatil. Amy lives in Oxford, Mississippi, with her husband and their two boys, age 9 and 12.
So it's been really good to, you know, to be human with them. Mm-hmm. And they also know mommy doesn't have the answers to everything. Mommy doesn't always make the best choices about everything. But it is hard, you know, they have a lot of questions of, mommy, when is this going to be over? Why are there no tests? You know, I mean, a lot of questions that I don't have an answer to. And they're not panicking, but I can see that they're, for the first time, realizing, you know, kind of, mommy and daddy don't have the answers, and this is all brand new to everybody. Like, and sometimes they're not wondering at all about this virus stuff. Sometimes they're wondering about, you know, the bluebirds that are nesting right now, you know, so that's been kind of nice.
I actually live in my grandma's old house in Honolulu, and it was built by my great-grandpa.
This is Laurel Salinas Nakanishi. She teaches poetry to kids and lives in a multi-generational house with her partner and her parents.
I can see the ocean from my house and it's really tempting. I can see the waves coming in and it's hard to stay away. Yeah, but technically we're not supposed to go to the beach. But yeah, we are able to go on jogs around the neighborhoods and walks and that sort of thing.
So what's it like to go through the pandemic in Honolulu?
I guess it feels kind of surreal because, you know, they're going to be, you know, they're already shutting down all of these flights from the continent and from other countries. And it kind of feels more like an island, like the island it always was, really. But we're really kind of looking around and saying, like, oh, yeah, we do live on this small, beautiful mass in the middle of the Pacific. And we're kind of feeling that maybe more.
We live in the heart of downtown, and it is the quietest we have ever heard in our whole lives down here.
Naomi Shihab Nye lives in San Antonio, Texas.
My husband Michael and I are used to being here together, but thank goodness he has a studio that is out in the yard. It's a separate building.
Oh, nice.
And I really do like that. You know, I think about the families with, like, lots of kids in one room, or, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We just feel, you know, luxurious because we have a yard and, you know, we can go out and sit and plant things. Or we used to raise chickens, by the way, and boy, do I miss them right now, because we used to be overwhelmed with eggs. We used to have 12 chickens out there working daily for us.
That was a different house, or you got rid of the chickens?
No, it was the same house. It was the same house, but we live right near the river that goes through San Antonio downtown, and chickens, you know, the chicken food attracts rodents.
Oh, yeah.
So at a certain point, my husband, who likes rats and mice less than I do, he said, that's it. We cannot have this chicken food out here anymore. So we don't have them anymore. We took them to another friend downtown who has chickens of his own plus ours. I should call him and say, after all these years, you owe me a few eggs, man.
I live with my partner and my partner's mom in San Diego, a small little California bungalow, Spanish style.
This is Kazem Ali.
And I'm actually on one of the bluffs that overlooks the valley. So it's quite pleasant, actually.
And how are you all sharing a space together? How has it been?
It's been fine. We have somewhat different hours. I wake up quite early in the morning, so I'm up for a good 3 hours before anybody else. And then we've been finding our own time away. Like, Marco goes on sometimes hikes, and he's a forager, so he's actually been hiking through the neighborhood and foraging.
Wow, what's he collecting?
Well, he found nasturtiums couple days ago, which he used the leaves to create a pesto, and we put the flowers in our food and ate them raw because they're peppery, spicy. Mm-hmm. And then I've gotten like a structure to my day too, you know, because I wake up much earlier than everyone else in the house and I'm here for a couple hours on my own. I've been making videos. So I've been reading poems every day, making little videos of me reading poems. And then I was making dance videos too. I haven't done anything with dance in almost 14 years. So the idea of like choreographing and creating and posting is very vulnerable and dude. I mean, I'm almost 50 years old as well, so it's not like I'm no spring chicken. I don't know. I think it's important. We're trying to enjoy our lives as well. It's not enough to just make it through. We want to also live and be happy.
When I emailed Sally Wen Mao to ask if I could call her a week and a half ago, she wrote me back, yes, but let's use Google Hangout. I'm in Mexico.
Hello?
Hi, Sally.
Hello.
How are you doing? What are you doing in Mexico?
I am not doing very well. things are very, very... I've been scrambling this morning. I don't know. I can tell you about like how I was planning a trip with my friend, like way before all of this was happening, and now I'm now I'm in Mexico and I was just trying to weigh my options. I don't think I can go home. And I actually thought that I could maybe stay here for a little bit because I could, I could afford to, you know, like quarantine myself here for a couple weeks at least. But now I'm learning about all this news this morning that the border is about to be closed and like people might be stranded outside of the US. And I'm just like, everything escalates so quickly.
Yeah.
And
like, it could be months.
It could be months is the thing. And I'm a little bit worried, really worried.
Is your friend with you?
My friend just left this morning. So she just flew back to New York this morning.
Why do you feel like you can't go home to where your parents are?
Because my family all lives together and they're sick right now.
Oh, God.
Since traveling, I learned that my dad has a cough and a fever and my cousin also had a high temperature, but it went down since. And my dad has diabetes. He has a heart condition. So that's why I can't go home.
Of course.
And I'm like really jealous of people who have homes to actually stay in, you know, and like jobs that will, you know, that will allow them to work from home, you know?
Yes, of course. I mean, it sounds almost unimaginably luxurious from your point of view.
Yeah, and as someone who's been like all of 2019 for me was just going on tour, you know, doing gigs here or there, as a poet, mm-hmm. and being on the market, but that's an extreme hustle, you know. So I'm just in this very like weird, like I'm trying to remain calm. Yeah.
God, Sally. What do you see when you look out the window?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's the ocean. Can you hear it?
I don't think I can.
I'm going to turn on my video so I can show you the view.
Please. Wow, that is like a blue ocean. I can't believe how beautiful that is.
Beautiful, yeah.
And they're just like little sheep clouds. Oh my God, it looks so insanely peaceful. That is, Sally, that is such a cognitive dissonance to like,
I know,
have that much beauty. And that much stress.
it truly is. And I feel like this is another like moment in the life of a poet, you know.
I know. Someone I wanted to talk to for sure was Ahmet Majmudar, because he's not only a poet, he's also a doctor, a radiologist at a hospital in Columbus, Ohio. And as you can imagine, these days haven't been easy.
I live not just with my elderly parents, but I also have a son who only has one functioning lung and a somewhat compromised immune system.
Oh, God.
So I'm very, very terrified of kind of bringing it home with myself. So when I go there, you know, even weeks ago, before the panic took hold everywhere, I was like the only guy in the whole hospital with like full gloves, full mask, you know, walking down the hallway, you know, in terror. The funniest thing was when there's like an office that has to be covered 24/7 in the hospital. And so I was in it for 6 hours. And then the guy who's relieving me comes in and he like stops short and he's like, man, it smells like a chemical factory in here. And I'm like, yep, you're not going to have to worry about any coronavirus in here because I bleached every surface. It's all taken care of. It got to the point where I refused to let the cleaning, the, like, you know, they have like the hospital cleaning service was coming through to clean the office, and they try to come in, and I was like, no, stay where you are. This does not need to be cleaned. And they're like, are you sure? And I'm like, oh, I'm sure, because I did it myself.
That's amazing. So, yeah. And do you now feel, I'm like, my question is like, you know, I think a lot of us in jobs that have nothing to do with healthcare or nothing to do with stocking shelves at supermarkets or, you know, something that is really useful
right now,
like struggle with like, we want to do something, but what can we do, you know? And I'm wondering, like, does it in a weird sense, even though you're worried about your son, but does it in a way also feel good that you get to do something?
You know, it's nice to be part of that and kind of pulling at the oars. The main issue that I have, and I think a lot of physicians have, is that we kind of got caught unprepared for this thing that people have been talking about being a potential problem for a very long time. And one of the more concerning things is that basically the shortage, nationwide shortage of N95 masks, which are the masks that best protect healthcare providers against inhaling COVID.
Yeah.
I actually didn't have one. And it just so happened that one of my best friends is a neuroradiologist in my group, and me and him are really close, and we also have very similar personalities where we imagine the worst case scenarios. And he very wisely had purchased on his own dime a small supply, like about, I think he had like 5 or 6 for his family and himself. And he's like, look, I have one extra one. And he's like, I'm going to put it in my garage and you can drive up. And then basically you pick it up, and I was like, I need to give you something for that. And I just had a book published in India, which is actually about friendship. And so I was like, I'm going to grab the mask out of your garage, and I'll put my book, my new book, right there in that spot.
That's incredible. And, that's so perfect.
And you wait 10 days until all the coronavirus is dead on it, and then you can read it.
So let me ask you about your home life. Who's in the house with you?
Well, you know, my wife and I have 3 kids. Well, I have twin sons. Mm-hmm. They're both 12. And then I have my daughter who's 6. So I do feel a little bit sad, though, when I think about how this has kind of entered their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, them having to wear gloves and help wipe down all the groceries that we got with sanitary wipes in order to make sure that all the virus is dead on the cereal box.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a memory that's not going away.
I wanted to ask you about the words that are constantly in the news right now. You know, these new words like social distancing.
Social distancing horrifies me. And I was appalled the first time I heard the phrase. Practice social distancing. It sounds so, sounds like a phrase the Nazis would have come up with. You know, it sounds like a horrible euphemism.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, it's not intended to sound that way, but to me, every time I hear it, I cringe because it sounds appalling. Keep your distance from everybody else. It's everybody for themselves, and it sounds that way to me, even though I know that's not how it's intended.
So we were walking down the street yesterday in the neighborhood. We were going for a walk, and I kept saying hello to the people we were passing.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, and I was waiting. Like most people, neither returned my greetings nor acknowledged us. It was like
Oof.
Eyes frozen on the ground, just walking by. You know, I just couldn't believe. I mean, I understand where that comes from, actually. Like, people are afraid of each other, or people feel like other people are potentially dangerous to them, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
But it was just, that part is, that's the hard part for me. It's not having things, but it's losing other people.
Just a mile from here, there's a nursing home that now has 32 cases of coronavirus.
And, you know, just the sight of people trying to press their faces to the windows of nursing homes, just trying to make some visual connection with their parents or grandparents, it's just heartrending.
It really is. Yeah, I can't even imagine the loneliness that those people inside those nursing homes must go through, you know?
I know, and the fear, because a lot of them are not, you know, are in various states of dementia, how hard it must be for them to understand what's happening.
I have elderly parents in Florida, and they're doing okay now, but, you know, they were supposed to be here for Easter, and I always see my mother for Mother's Day, and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I can't think about it too much, or I will just, you know, break down and not want to come out of bed. I'm hoping that I can see them all soon in person, you know, but one of the few times that I've been really excited about having technology is we FaceTime every day so I could see their faces, they could talk to the kids.
Yeah.
So that's been lovely, but absolutely. My heart is still very heavy.
Well, I really want to see my grandson, and it's been only 6 days, and he lives in this town, so I'm really lucky in that regard. So hopefully people will feel that it's safe enough for me to see him, like, soon, because I can't stand it.
And have you been talking on the phone with your grandson?
He doesn't really like FaceTiming. We do it sometimes, but it upsets him because he likes to be close to the person he's talking to.
What have you been doing with yourself?
Mostly I've been working. I just turned grades in today, and so that big crunch is over, and now I'm sort of facing the open time, and I just keep thinking about, you know, that Emily Dickinson poem that ends, "So we must meet apart. You there, I here, with just the door ajar that oceans are, and prayer, and that white sustenance, despair." That keeps going through my mind, and I'm thinking about, I've got to find more ways to meet apart, you know, to try to make it more of a meeting and less of an apart.
You know, this past week, since the schools closed and switched to online learning, I've been just really trying to get these poetry teaching videos out, and paired with each video is like a little craft that connects to the poem that the kids wrote. And so I've been making, I never thought I would be doing this, but I've been like dressing up tangerines with little faces and bow ties. That's like one craft. I just need a poetry landscape where, like, it's a little mini playground that the kids are gonna make.
I'm definitely digging deeper in the little tiny cupboard where, you know, pantry goods are kept.
Mm-hmm.
And so I posted this thing this morning on Instagram. I put a box of barley and one of those little jars of pimentos. And I said, you know, you're getting down when the barley and the pimentos come out. And then all these people after my post started posting, I just learned I have 6 jars of honey. And then somebody posted, I'm desperate for barley. And I don't even know who that person is, but I'm going to offer to mail them some. They said they can't get it at all. So we're all having treasure hunts inside our own houses, you know, our kitchens, our bookshelves. So the other day I found myself going to the post office, where I'm probably not supposed to go, carrying this huge, massive stack of books. I think someone I know in Oklahoma would really love this book. I'm going to send it to her right now because I read it years ago and I'm probably not going to read it again. And sorry for talking so much. Obviously, I'm in isolation because it's so much fun to talk.
I don't know. I've been trying to read. I'm definitely not writing.
What are you reading?
You know, honestly, I've been reading The Birds in the Backyard right now. They're all coming back from wintering, and we have some bully birds coming through and trying to take over our bluebird nest.
Oh, no.
They're small bullies, so I haven't figured them out. I've never seen these birds before. I thought I would have a name by now, and I don't. But they're small enough to slip in the cracks. In the kind of the hinge part of a typical bluebird house, which is what we have, and we have bluebirds who are nesting there now, and they're being very vigilant and trying to shoo other birds away. But these little wily birds have been coming in stealing sticks, and so my dog and I have been out there trying to shoo them away without also scaring the bluebird parents. So it's been a whole drama. It's like a telenovela of bluebird situation going on right now.
And it's funny that you haven't figured out a name yet for these little bully birds, that they're just bully birds, which
yeah,
is what they are.
They're bully birds, and I have all the books, and I got to get out there with my binoculars again. I've just never seen those before, ever. So I'm charmed but repulsed by them, too. I want to get them out.
Totally. So that maybe is like the perfect project for with your kids, you know?
That's good. I love that. I'm going to be giving them that challenge here this afternoon. It's like, oh, mommy doesn't know the name of this bird. We will find out.
Perfect.
His favorite thing is to be with his family and to be home. And sometimes he can find social activity to be more challenging. So for him, it's actually been kind of fun. I don't know how it will be over the long term. I hope it's not, you know, incredibly long term. But right now, he seems to be dealing with it the best of anybody in the family. You know, we made a little book together. We stapled together some pages or whatever. And every day, you know, he'll write his name, or he'll draw something he's thinking about, or we'll look for all the rectangles in the house, and then we'll draw the things we found. And he's starting to read a little bit, which is pretty great. So we'll sit and we'll read a book, and I'll ask him to read a letter, read a word, and he'll read a word, and then we'll just sit there for a while and do that.
What's that been like? I mean, especially because you are a writer, like letters are so cool, right? I mean, it is kind of...
Oh my God. I mean, letters, and I think one thing I'm really just so into is just listening to my kid kind of try to put together sentences in a way that makes sense to him. And often I find that like the order of the words reflects the order of their importance. Oh. Reminds me a little bit of those paintings, like pre-Renaissance paintings, where like the baby Jesus would be really huge and the like, although he'd be really little because it was like, he was more important.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like supposed to look like what it actually would look like if a baby was there. And
yeah,
it's like, I thought it was hilarious, those pictures. And so my kid's use of language is a little bit like that too. You know, it's like he'll put the thing that's most important first. And then he might also throw it in a few more times just to make sure that, you know, it's absolutely in there. I mean, one funny thing, it was, this happened probably about a little over a year ago, but we were at a swimming pool and it was cold, but we were at the pool and he was in and he was like trying to get me to go in. And I was like, no way, man, it's like freezing. And so he looked at me and just said, it's too daddy for cold. So it's just, you know, that's a small example, but there's a lot of things like that happen that are incredibly adorable.
It is adorable. It's nice that you're first in the sentence. Yeah. You know, that feels good, I'm sure.
Yeah. But once I got to be first. Usually it's mommy. It's mommy's first. Apparently I sleep in mommy's room, which is, you know, like, but there's nothing more tedious than listening to people talk about how cute their kids are. But
no,
but
I love this.
It's sweet. He's a sweet guy, and it's actually, he's so in the present moment as all any 5-year-old is.
Yeah,
that it's actually like quite a relief. I'm like, you know, sorting these dice into different colors or drawing a, you know, picture of a stuffed animal or whatever, you know, and not look at the internet and not try to be on a Zoom meeting about best practices for Zoom meetings, which seems to be like half of my life right now, is like meetings about the best way that we're going to be able to do meetings.
We are planning a Zoom session with our bunch of friends where we're going to do charades on Zoom. And I'm really happy about this. We set up rules. We're not going to talk about coronavirus because I've been having these cocktail hours, you know, with friends, which has been wonderful. But then we end up talking about coronavirus most of the time. It doesn't exactly
it doesn't exactly accomplish what happy hours are meant to accomplish.
Bruce Beasley is based in Bellingham, Washington. Matthew Zapruder lives in Piedmont, California. Amy Nzukumatatl talked to me from Oxford, Mississippi. Amit Majmudar from Columbus, Ohio. And Naomi Shihab Nye from San Antonio, Texas. Laurel Salinas Nakanishi lives in Honolulu. And you can find her poetry videos for kids on her website, laurelnakanishi.com. To find the dance and poetry videos Kazem Ali has been making at his home in San Diego, check out his Twitter bio for the link. And if you're wondering if Sally Wenmao is okay, 2 days after I called her at her hotel room in Cancun, she wrote me an email. It was a whirlwind, she wrote, but I made it. I'm now in Las Vegas and safe. To find out more on any of these poets, check out the Poetry Foundation website. The music in this episode is by Todd Sickafoos. The sounds are from freesound.org or from my kitchen or my window. I'm Helena de Groot, and this was Poetry Off the Shelf. I hope you're well. Thank you for listening.